Welcome back to our afternoon session. Hopefully you all stay as interested in the message as we did in the children's class. That'll be a good afternoon if we do so. The topic, the message for this afternoon is the gift of family. We're looking at God's gifts to us. I want to start out with the testimony of Jacob. And he lifted up his eyes, this is Esau, and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are those with thee?" And Jacob said, "The children which God hath graciously given thy servant." I love how Jacob answered his brother. And I think there's a lesson that we can learn in response to the questions that come our way many times in life about our families. And I think we would be wise to follow in Jacob's example and reference that our families are who God has graciously given us. If you find it like we do, it is frequently when we're out and about in society, maybe we're shopping or maybe we're at a restaurant, we'll often get compliments for our family. And it's an opportunity to honor and glorify God, because it is truly a blessing from Him. It's a gift. And it burdens my heart as I see our broken society and broken families and distressed people. What is supposed to be such a treasure, such a beautiful thing, is so awful, and it's so destructive. I witnessed personally the mental anguish and distress of a friend of mine as he went through a devastating breakup in his marriage. And it was just eye-opening to me how physically destroying it was to him. He could not function normally. He couldn't make decisions. He had a business and he couldn't make decisions in his business. You could watch him lose. He lost weight as the summer went by. He got skinnier and skinnier. You could see he wasn't sleeping at night, and it riveted in my mind how destroying it is when the gift a family is broken that way. Turn with me to Psalm 128 for our text verses for this afternoon. Psalm 128, I'd like us to read this together. Read this whole psalm. If you could join me in beginning with verse 1. Psalm 128, verse 1. Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord, that walketh in his ways. For thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house. Thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. The Lord shall bless thee out of Zion, and thou shalt see the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Yea, thou shalt see thy children's children, and peace upon Israel. I believe the greatest institution in this world is monogamous matrimony. Big words, but let me just simplify. Monogamous matrimony means to be married to one person. It's the simple form of that. There are other types of matrimony. There's bigamy, there's polygamy, and there is a myriad other perversions or deviations to what God has designed for our blessing. Ungodly man has tried, I believe, every perversion of that, one form or the other, and we see that around us today, and we witness the destruction that goes on and on. That comes from that. And it seems like we could echo the description of Noah's day, The imagination of their thoughts was only evil continually. But from the beginning of the world, God designed for one man and one woman to marry for life. And we have Jesus' teachings in Mark 10 that reiterate that. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh, so that they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Children and adults alike thrive in the dimension inside of monogamous matrimony. Society tries to say there are other relationships that are equal and that are just as good, but the results they get from them are devastating. Misused people, abused people, result is people live in sin and live however they want to. And innocent people are harmed every day. And as I ponder that truth, I wonder at times how God can refrain himself from closing this chapter of the world with the debauchery that goes on in our society. So sad. I'd like to begin, go back to our text passage and begin with verse 1. Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord and walketh in his ways. If we but follow in God's way, the blessing of life is awaiting us. A person that fears the Lord gives God his rightful place in his life. He understands that God is a fearful God. We talked about that this morning. So we pondered the coming judgment and God's holiness. And so as we understand who God is, we choose to obey him and walk in his ways. Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord that walketh in his ways. Meaning in life comes by boundaries. The world feeds us a different philosophy. They try to teach us that true experience will happen. Opportunity awaits us when we are freed from boundaries, when we are freed from structures, when we can enter in and discover things that boundaries restrain us from. But true meaning in life comes by boundaries. Let me put it in the context of my marriage. When I said that I will to my wife, I said I won't to everyone else. That's a boundary. When I said I do to my wife, I said I don't to everyone else. That's a boundary. And a man and a woman will never know the hidden beauty of a monogamous relationship if they don't live within those boundaries. And it's only living inside of those boundaries can you enjoy the blessing that comes from walking in God's ways. Our ungodly society tries to pursue pleasure unbounded. But unbounded pleasure brings meaninglessness in your life. We could go to Ecclesiastes and we could read how Solomon pursued pleasure unbounded. And what did he say at the end of it? Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. That's what boundaryless living produces. Meaninglessness and hopelessness. Just as monogamous matrimony provides the venue for a man and a woman to become one flesh, so it provides a structure by which a child can be nurtured and reared to become a fully functional adult with the skills that it needs to thrive in life. Outside of that type of child rearing, we end up with people in society who are so handicapped to function inside of relationships because they have been raised in a broken situation and they don't have the relational skills, they don't have the behavior skills to function. And we see many of them spinning out of life. Because, and they don't know why. Our society is trying every deviation that can imagine from this and are puzzled at its failures. For the child of God, it only makes sense that what the Creator tells us to do would be in our best interest. Does it not? We can never comprehend the mind of God. It's so far beyond the reach of a human mind. And yet, if we are but willing to obey His commandments, inside of His commandments, we find, in a nutshell, the mind of God. Because God's commandments are His mind reduced down to something that we can obey. And as we obey them and follow them and walk in His ways, we are, in essence, using the wisdom of the Eternal One. In Mark 10, Jesus reaffirms that God's original intention was that one man and one woman would marry and bear children. In the context of family, God has designed for children to be born, protected, cared for, and raised to adulthood. A child's deepest needs can be met with inside of a godly marriage. Security, love, and discipline are three needs that are met inside a monogamous marriage. So fascinating to watch your children find those three needs met in their life and to grow up to be well-adjusted, well-balanced, functional children. Just the other evening, my wife and I were sitting there on the couch and our little 1.5-year-old came up to us, and she can't talk much yet, but she made it very well known that she intended to sit between Dad and Mom. And she fussed until finally my wife moved over and she climbed up on the couch, sat down between us, and she was the happiest little girl sitting there. And I said to my wife, I said, can you imagine how secure she feels? Sitting there, on one side of her is her big, strong dad. Another side of her is her wonderful mother. And all is right in the world for that little child. Such an opposite story is being lived out. It's being experienced all across our societies. And our world can't understand why children are growing up and are such broken children. God has made us sexual creatures, and He's designed within the parameters of monogamous marriage that these desires find fulfillment. Verse 2, for thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands, happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. This is a basic law of life. Thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Many are confused about this truth today. They believe that they are actually eating at the hands of the labor of their government. And others would believe and teach today that it is immoral that Mr. Smith is wealthy and Mr. Jones is poor. They would teach that is immoral. But the law of God is that thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. And so if Mr. Smith's work brings forth 100-fold and Mr. Jones' work brings forth 10-fold, they are actually eating the fruits of their labor. And that is fair. That's the law of God. In reality, it is immoral to take from Mr. Smith and to give to Mr. Jones, to even that up. Now, that's not what you hear today. Today you hear that wealth redistribution is fairness, and to have a rich man and a poor man is immoral. Now, we could talk about reasons of poverty and such like, and we're not going to here. But the point that I'm reiterating, taught us from Scripture, is that thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. And doing so brings immense satisfaction to a person. It's rewarding and liberating to sit down to a meal and observe that all the main ingredients to the meal were grown and prepared by your family. I find that immensely satisfying. There's certainly nothing wrong with buying your food, but I love the satisfaction that comes from eating the labor of your hands. And children learn to work, and they learn the value of labor inside of the gift of family and home. We give our children a tremendous skill when we give them, when we develop within them a strong work ethic. Because if it's not taught at home, it's rarely learned after that. And for years, it was so obvious to a child that what a family ended up with was the fruit of their labors. So when they worked in the garden with dad and mom, when they worked in the field with dad, at harvest time, they looked in their barn and they saw all that hay, they saw that corn, they saw the wheat, whatever it might be, and they knew, the dots were connected, that the fruit that's in our storehouse came from our labor. When they looked in the pantry or in the cellar, all the canned goods, the potatoes, you name it, there was a direct connection between how we work this summer is what we have to eat this fall. Today, that is that connection is not as strong as it once was. Dad goes away to work, there's always food on the table. Obviously, it's the labor of dad that provides it, but sometimes we can lose the direct connection that what we labor with is then what we enjoy. And so when we see around us a society that have lived, if you're thinking of the welfare program, people who are totally disconnected from that they eat the labor of, from the labor of their hands. The blessing of family, the gift of family, to learn a work ethic and to enjoy the labor of your hands and to learn the value of labor goes hand in hand. It's sad to hear the iteration that it is best for man to live alone. I don't know if you have people that mention that to you or not, but I find that sentiment. I work in a public business where I meet the public, and that is a sentiment that comes towards me frequently from my customers. This has probably been a couple months ago, but now had an older gentleman come into the store, and he mentioned the fact that he had heard that one of my older brothers had recently got married. Now, I'm 35, and one of my older brothers got married last fall in September. He was 46, if I believe right. And this gentleman was puzzled at the fact that after 46 years that my brother would still get married. He said, I would have thought by now he'd have learned that it was better to live alone. And I was flummoxed by that conclusion because it has been such a delight to observe the joy of my brother and his new wife, old newlyweds, I guess is maybe how you'd say it, newly oldweds, that I wasn't even sure how to respond to him. I'm thinking, I mean, we're worlds apart here. And in the course of his conversation, he mentioned his son. So I know he has had a relationship of some type in his life. And most likely, we didn't delve into it, but most likely it's a broken and sour one. Why else would a man not want to grow old with his best friend? Why else would a man want to grow old by himself? Except that he's self-centered or is bittered by a broken relationship. God said to Adam, it is not good that man should be alone. Loneliness has a proven negative effect on people. Research shows that the years that you live in loneliness, you will gradually lose the ability to function simple daily tasks because of loneliness. And I've been told by a lonely person that loneliness can become such a dimension into your life that you can actually have a physical pain inside of you from being lonely. Healthy families have very little loneliness. I grew up in a family with 6 brothers and 2 sisters, and there was always a hubbub. There was always stuff happening. There wasn't a chance to be lonely. I grew up in a church community, friends, family. I don't know what loneliness is. The gift of family, the gift that family gives us is to not know loneliness. but to know friendships, to have siblings, to have good relationships. Who wants to grow old by themselves? Very few people. Only those who are extremely self-centered and those who are bitter by broken relationships. How a community cares for its young and its elderly reveals its godliness. Shifting gears just slightly here. It is God's design that parents care for their children and that children care for their elderly parents. I believe that is another basic truth. Now, I understand that sometimes there are circumstances that can't work out, that are beyond the ability of parents or children. But by and large, as you look at a community and you observe how they care for their young and how they care for their old, I believe is a testimony of the godliness that is in that community. Recently, I learned the fact that introducing Social Security into our society in the United States has had a profound impact on reducing family size. I'd never put the two and two together until I heard this being taught. Before Social Security, a person's old age plan was basically his children. It was a very simple understanding. As a young adult, you pour your life into birthing and raising children. And when you're old and unable to care for yourself, your children that you poured your life into will take care of you. They will make sure that you aren't homeless. They'll give you a home to live in. They'll feed you. They'll take care of you when you're no longer able. When you die, they will bury you. They'll respectfully care for your body. That was a mental, most likely subconscious, but a philosophy, an understanding of how life existed for millenniums. But when people discovered that you could have a dysfunctional family and still be cared for when you're older, suddenly the need to have children and to have a functional family and to have good relationships with your children when you were elderly didn't matter as much anymore because someone else will take care of you. Couple the support from the government with the medical advancements to prevent or terminate pregnancy, and now we have an aging populace with very few people to care for them. And there are a lot of old, lonely people around us. Just talk to them. They're lonely. Why? Most likely they don't have children to come care for them. Recently, an older gentleman that had worked for me got a knee replacement. In fact, it happened Thursday of this week. Guess what? He asked his co-worker to come to the hospital with him and to stay with him, stay there during his surgery. Where was his family? Where was his son? Where was his children? Something strange. Family is a gift. Verse 3 and 4, thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. Scriptural view of children is that they are a blessing. A man is considered blessed to have a wife and children. This is the picture painted of a successful man. One that is blessed by God. He has his own grapevines. If you read in read the Old Testament, you'll discover that a successful man had his own grapevine, he had his own olive trees. He was self-sufficient. He had what it took to survive. And here in this passage, it likens having children and a wife to a fruitful vine and olive plants around your table. Blessings from God. I believe our wife and our children know if we consider them a blessing from God or not. And woe to us men if they think that we consider them to be a bother and a not a blessing. I think that they should hear us frequently reference them as a blessing. I think that they should hear us thank God for them. I think it should be a frequent phraseology in our prayers that we thank God for our godly wife and our children. I think it does so much for them to know that they rate highly in Dad's priority list, his family. Nothing depicts life and vitality like a family with a bunch of youngsters. I mentioned earlier, it's rare to take the whole family shopping without receiving a compliment. And it is at that time that we have the opportunity to give honor and glory to God, because it's of God that this happens. This isn't because we are so wise, but it's because that we're following the wisdom of the Ancient of Days. And when you follow his wisdom, you receive this blessing. Functional families are a gift. Many of the world don't believe it's a possibility. And that's why I think they're so amazed when they see a dad and mom and a group of youngsters, and they actually behave half decent. They don't throw temper tantrums. They eat nicely. They're dressed respectfully. It's like, are you from some other world? No. This is a reality if you follow God's way. The opposite is not a gift. Dysfunctional families aren't a gift. Why are the holidays so stressful in society? It's because families aren't functional, and they know when they get together that they won't relate functionally. They'll be unhappy. There'll be bickering and fighting. There isn't forgiveness. There isn't love. There isn't the good things. And nostalgically, we believe that there should be, because I think there is a sense yet where our society knows that families should be functional, and yet how often when they get together, they aren't that way. What makes functional families? Simple. Understanding and living inside the parameters of our God-given roles. Father needs to be father. He is king. He's feared, loved, and respected. Mother needs to be mother. She is queen. She nurtures and encourages. Children need to honor and obey. They are the subjects. Now, we can tiptoe around that and try to say it a different way and try to water it down, but this is God's way. And I believe that if we want our families to be functional, we need to live this way. Mother is not the king. Father is not the queen. The children aren't the king. Father's king, mother's queen. The children are the subjects. And when we follow that way, we can have a tremendous blessing in our lives. Father and mother need to love each other and their children. I believe if parents disagree, they need to resolve their disagreements when they're by themselves after the children are in bed. I have in my notes, and I'm going to say it, you can water it down if you like to. I know different homes, different parents relate to each other differently, but I have in my notes, never argue in front of your children. Arguing parents distress children. You can observe it. Children instinctively know that something is wrong if mom and dad are arguing or bickering or fighting. And they want to have no part of it. They're like, let's get out of here. Let's go find a safe place. Something is wrong in the home when the king and the queen don't see eye to eye. And so my advice is, there are those situations when you don't see eye to eye. Resolve them outside of your child's hearing. And I believe your children will thank you for that. Children want their parents to be united. That's what they want. Support each other 100%. I believe children need to know that there is no crack between mom and dad. I well remember as a child growing up that I would ask mom if I could do something. Mom, can I go do something? And if it was something she wasn't sure about, she'd think about it for a little bit, and she'd say, you need to go ask Pop. And so Pop was often milking cows. You would truck out to the barn, you'd go in there, and you'd say, Pop, may I go on a bike ride or whatever it was? He would say, well, what did your mom say? I'd say, well, Mom said, go ask you. And so he would decide what to do. But I learned from that there wasn't one or the other that I could go to and get a favor of. They had each other's back, and they supported each other 100%. And if they weren't sure, they deferred to the other one. And I think it's beneficial to children to know that their parents are united. Home should be a safe place. Every child is loved unconditionally, even though they have a variety of personalities, and some need discipline more than others. I believe that if we want our home to be functionally, there can't be favoritism. Johnny can't know that Sally gets treated easier than he does, or vice versa. I believe that they should know that the umbrella of Dad and Mom's love is over them all. And I grew up in a home where verbal expressions of love weren't that frequent, weren't very frequent at all, in fact. We knew we were loved, home was secure, but I well remember my father making a statement that he loved me as much as he loved one of my other brothers. And that was such a welcome thing to hear. And I think it is something that we need to communicate to our children verbally, but it's something that they also can know if we say it and don't live it. And it's important that we live it. Home is a safe place. It's a place where we communicate. Supper table should be a fun time. It should be an enjoyable time. Children should be wanting to talk and tell Dad and Mom what happened in their day. And something's wrong when home is not a place that a child wants to go, even when they're older. Home should be where a child gravitates. Safe. It's where you know you're loved. What makes functional families? Children are taught are told no and taught that no means no. A child that never learns to rest with a no is a very frustrated child. It's important that we say no and mean no and then help our children to come to rest with this. Son, you need to learn to accept this. If you want to be happy, you have to accept this and learn to be okay with it. And help them to learn to relax under your authority, submit to it. It's the best gift, one of the best gifts you can give your children. If you can teach them to respond correctly to authority. I tell my children, do you know why people end up in jail? It's because they never learn to listen to their parents. Really? Yeah. If you don't learn to obey, that's where people end up. And it's true. It's true. It's what the jails are full of children. Never learn to obey. Be your child's parent, not their friend. Verse 5 and 6, the Lord shall bless thee out of Zion, and thou shalt see the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Yea, thou shalt see thy children's children in peace upon Israel. The gift of family blesses our community. Good would come to Jerusalem because of this functional, blessed family. And so much good comes to our communities because of godly families in them. The peace and the good that comes as families serve God within a community. Godly families are peaceable families. They contribute to peace. And our world could handle a lot more peace and a lot more good than it has right now. There have been 7 mass shootings by young males since 2005. Only one of the 7 lived with his biological father through his childhood. Society is staring open-mouthed as these violent young men leave a carnage of destruction behind them. But the root problem is never fixed. Boys need a father so they can grow up functionally. And unfortunately, with our broken homes, most times the girls have their mother, because the mother generally gets custody of the children. But the boys rarely have their father. And boys need a daddy so they can grow up functionally. Instead, we label this stuff toxic masculinity, and the world gives it other names, but In reality, a son needs a dad to mentor him and to model after and to be molded after so that he can grow up and be a functional adult. If he doesn't have that, we see what happens. They can't hold it together. They don't know how to handle life. They're full of bitterness and anger. And it's hard to fix a broken man. Boys have so much potential that needs developed and mentored by their father. But if he is missing, it won't happen. When we don't walk in God's ways, we aren't promised life. And I believe that is what our society is experiencing today. They're not walking in God's ways. And in the harshest reality of it, the result of that is death. Violence, destruction of people. The family that we are born into gives us our ethnicity. A person's ethnicity is sacred. Let me explain what I mean by this. This is why the Christian church brought about the end to slavery and racism. God determines your ethnicity. He determines what family you're born into. He determines the color of your hair, the color of your skin, your height, the color of your eyes. He determines whether you're Caucasian or African American or Asian or European or Bengali, or the list goes on and on. That is determined by God. It isn't something that I choose. It isn't something that you choose. It's sacred. It's a part of you. And that's why it is wrong to mistreat or despise someone because of their ethnicity. God made them just like he made you. There is no superior race. In fact, and there's no inferior race. There's only one race, and that's the human race. There's only one blood, as Acts says. Acts 17:26 says, "And hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth." That is what the scripture says. Science confirms that. When we bleed, we all bleed the same color. To be racist or to mistreat people based on the color of their skin, what country they're from, what language they speak, is wrong. They had no choice in the matter, just like you and I have no choice and what family that we are born into. It is a gift given to you by your family, your ethnicity. We are all sons of Adam. We are all one blood. We all bleed the same color. In conclusion, I'd like to read this psalm again. "Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord, that walketh in his ways. For thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of the house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. The Lord shall bless thee out of Zion, and thou shalt see the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Yea, thou shalt see thy children's children, and peace upon Israel." Let's kneel for prayer.